Truth Seekers. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for joining us this evening. I had a feeling today that I had my leg caught in one of those leg hold traps. You ever feel that way? You just want to sit down and gnaw your foot off? Man, it is getting so bizarre. We have some sound for you. Two clips from Hillary Clinton that, I don't know. I'm beginning to think that she has completely lost touch with political reality. And her refusal to consider that the race is over, it really is becoming like borderline mental problem. I hate to put it in those terms, but just about everybody and their brother and sister is saying to Hillary, look, you didn't make it, you know? And to hear some of the things that that she's saying now about, well, onward and upward to West Virginia and then to where, Puerto Rico? Or I don't know. It's but listening to that and some of the other events of the day, I just had a feeling I was in one of those leg hold traps. Ah, awful stuff. Speaking of awful stuff, today in San Francisco, former radio talk show host Bernie Ward pled guilty in federal court to one count of sending child pornography over the Internet. He admitted to the charge during a hearing before a U.S. district judge there. He told the judge he sent pornography containing sexually explicit pictures of minors by email. Now, that sounds like a contradiction, but if you get a little bit further into what happened today, in a separate written plea agreement, Bernie Ward admitted for sentencing purposes that he distributed a total of between 15 and 150 images of child pornography via email. He did. So research on a book kind of fades away with that admission. The assistant U.S. attorney prosecuting this said in a written statement that the 15 to 150 images that Bernie Ward admitted sending, quote, involved prepubescent children engaged in sexually explicit conduct, some with sadistic, masochistic, or violent content, end quote. Bernie, you can continue research on your book in prison. And if they put you in the general population, I don't think you will lack for subjects who would be interested in talking with you about this. Now, at the request of Bernie Ward's defense lawyer, the judge deferred accepting the guilty plea until the question of whether Bernie Ward must immediately be taken to prison is resolved. There will be a sentencing hearing August 28th. Ward's defense attorney said that in the meantime, Ward's legal status is that he has tendered a guilty plea, but the judge has taken whether to accept it under advisement. The charge carries a mandatory minimum sentence of 5 years in prison and a possible maximum of 20 years. The attorney said he expects his client, Bernie Ward, to spend at least 4 years and 3 months in prison, even with credit for good behavior. The Bernie Ward's attorney told the judge that Ward's use of child pornography occurred, quote, in a few weeks in 2004 and 2005, end quote, and reflected, quote, an error in judgment rather than sexual proclivity, end quote. Really? The defense lawyer previously said Ward was looking at the child pornography for research on a book on hypocrisy. The attorney said, quote, he, Ward, thought it was legal to do that as a journalist. But our conclusion was that the courts wouldn't accept that, the attorney said. He added, quote, Bernie is not a sexual predator. Well, if Mr. Ward has pled guilty for the sake of a plea agreement to one count of sending sexually explicit pictures of minors, plural, by email, and in a separate written plea agreement, admitted to distributing up to 150 images of sadistic, masochistic, violent, sexual activity involving prepubescent children, that Mr. Ward, may you rot in prison.
I just wanted to add one thing, because what really sealed it in my mind, I mean, if anyone had any doubt about this, was the fact that, I don't know if it was Open Secrets or there was some website that published, the reason he pled guilty, that he finally had to come clean.
Oh, the transcripts.
Was because there was an online transcript. A woman came forward who was an online adult dominatrix, and there are these adult chat sites. There's nothing wrong with that.
The sex fairy.
The sex fairy. And she's the one that turned him in, because
right.
he was making all of this explicit sex talk about children.
Right. It went beyond adult to adult.
Right.
And he started sending her some of these hideously painful images of children.
I believe there was only one image, but the talk that was going on, and there are transcripts all over the internet if anybody wanted to look this up and read it and verify it, it was disgusting.
He talks about molesting his own children.
His own children,
Jesus
and having
Christ.
His children do things to him and do things to each other and do things, you know, and watching them and wanting to touch them and asking her for permission to touch himself while he's talking about it. And it got so bad that she turned him over. Now, you think about this. You're a dominatrix, and it's got to be bad.
Right.
If you go to I'm a dominatrix, and I'm coming to the police because this guy's freaked me out, and I'm a dominatrix. So, I mean, you know that doesn't bode too well. So if anyone wanted to read it, that's why he finally had to come clean and say, okay, it wasn't so much about the research because, you know, this
right.
chick put it out there. And he did send her one picture. Apparently there was a naked boy seated on a chair between a dressed child girl and a topless adult woman.
Yeah.
And he sent that picture to her.
Well, my attitude towards sexual predators is unrestrained. I don't give a damn if it's a liberal, a conservative, Jew, Gentile, black, white, gay, straight. I don't care. Sexual abuse of children, especially like this, where masochism gets involved, sadomasochism becomes involved. These are children, for Christ's sake. These are children who have absolutely no idea what these adult predators are doing. And I just have no mercy, just none, none whatsoever. I said the other night when we mentioned that sentencing hearing was going to occur today, that I received several emails from people who just, you know, tried to tear me a new body orifice when this first came out back in December. And I made the statement that, you know, while no one is determining guilt prior to some sort of a hearing, that Bernie Ward's defense was so typically the defense of people who are guilty as hell. This is always the first thing. Oh, no, 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 no. All that stuff you found on my computer, all that stuff I was sending out. Oh, no, 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 no. That wasn't for me. I, you see, was writing a book. Ah! On the evils of child sexual exploitation. The evils of hypocrisy. Oh, no, 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 no. Wasn't me. You know, that is so shopworn, that excuse. And I also tossed in the fact that he's a former Catholic priest, and that pissed off a lot of people. Look, I'm sorry, folks, but it's the Catholic priests who have molested tens of thousands of children whom you should direct your outrage to. And it is sexual predators who go after defenseless, innocent children to whom you should direct your nasty emails to. Leave me out of the loop, all right? Thank you. Bernie, you're in for a rough ride, pal. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Baby, don't cry tonight. Daddy's here and he'll sing you a soft lullaby tonight. Why can't it all be like it was before? How can I explain why mommy's not here anymore? 'Cause daddy likes porno and $10 whores. Daddy gets wasted and robs liquor stores. Daddy likes rubbing against little boys on the bus. I think that's why your mommy...
fly monkey right blues. Here's the cure, Mike Malloy.
We mentioned this to you the other night. Last weekend, Hillary Clinton went on Bill Orley's Fox News wrestling match, or whatever you want to call it, to drum up support from O'Reilly's audience. Obviously, why else would she be there? What is O'Reilly's audience? For the most part, according to Nielsen, it is white working class males, with not a whole lot of education. That's not me saying that. That's Nielsen. And during that program, she made a comment about God blessing rich people like she and Mr. O'Reilly. Now, when you couple this with her comments today about white people voting for her instead of Barack, you tell me, who's the out-of-touch elitist? Who's the racist? Now, this is from O'Reilly last week. She's trying to assure the rich people out there that she's not going to raise the payroll tax.
I am not in favor of lifting the cap. That's Senator Obama.
I am not in favor of lifting the cap. Okay, so you're going to keep it at 109.
We're going to see what happens here.
All right.
So you're kind of waffling here. No, I'm not waffling. I'm saying I'm not going to impose additional burdens on middle-class families. And there
but
are
I'm
a lot
not
of
middle-class
people,
family. Well, I'm a rich guy.
And you know what? Rich people, God bless us. We deserve all the
all
opportunities
right.
to make sure
so
our country
assume.
And our blessings continue to the next generation.
Oh, that's kind of the... the rich person's burden, or the white folks' burden, or something, right? So, USA Today's Kathy Kiley interviewed Hillary yesterday, asking her how she could win at this point. And Hillary didn't say this, but maybe she's counting on the Klan vote or something. Sounds like she's making a direct appeal here to the pig man and his Operation Chaos crazies. Here's Kathy Kiley.
How does Hillary Clinton win the nomination?
Well, Kathy, you know, there was just an AP article posted that found how Senator Obama's support among working, hardworking Americans, white Americans, is weakening again, and how the whites in both states who had not completed college were supporting me, and in independence, I was running even with him and doing even better with Democratic-leaning independents. I have a much broader base to build a winning coalition on.
Oh, God. So she's going for the white vote, whether it's rich or poor, right? It's pretty astonishing to me. I don't know if this matters to Hillary supporters that these kinds of statements are being made by this candidate, and not just these. To me, they're overt appeals to white people to stop the Negro. To a lot of other people, they may be a little bit shaded. They may be covert. They may be. Code words. Now, this is straight-ahead racism, no matter how you figure it. Now, somebody will make the argument, how can you make the claim, Malloy, that Hillary Clinton's a racist? Well, how can I do that? Somebody who uses race baiting, which is what this is. This is what Hillary and Bill have been doing since South Carolina. Someone who uses race baiting, regardless of what they have, how they've presented themselves in the past. Well, you know, I'm not a racist. I may be white, but I'm not a racist. Look at all the good things I've done for our black brothers and sisters. You know, that's nonsense. Now, I don't know how many white people see through this. Black folk take a look at statements like that and just kind of sit back and say, well, yeah, okay, we get you, Hillary. And you have to be able to understand the code. You have to be able to understand, and that's an effort for white people to do that. For black people, it's not an effort at all, because they have been listening to the code for a long time. As a matter of fact, black folk, while not necessarily the originators of the code, they know that the code was originated about them. So, of course, they are going to understand it. And everybody gets their ass all in an uproar when Reverend Jeremiah Wright talks his kind of talk inside the confines of his church, where kicking white ass has been a tradition in the black church for, well, let me see, 300 years, 250 years? Ever since black folk were dragged to this country in chains, where else were black preachers going to talk about this, right? But for white people, see, we can say it anywhere. We can say it to a reporter for USA Today. We don't have to hide anything. We can just come out and say it. Well, you know, Barack Obama doesn't appeal much to white people. The subtext being, you know why, Kathy? You and I both know why, don't we, Kathy Kiley, USA Today? And I'm Hillary Clinton, and I can stand right out and say this. And what's going to happen to me? Nothing. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
I'm sick of you. They arrested the mayor for an illegal favor, sold the Empire State to Japan. And Oliver North married William C. Court and gave birth to a little Tehran. And the Ayatollah bought a nuclear warship if he dies and wants to go out in style. And there's nothing to eat that don't carry the stink of some human waste dumped in the Nile. But one thing is certainly true, no one here knows what to do, and I'm sick.
Tonight, how much he hates these people? It's more of Mike Malloy.
Welcome back. 26 before the hour. Just a program note. Is it tomorrow night that we have the director or the producer and the narrator of part one, Demolition, this film, documentary film about the collapse of the three buildings, the World Trade Center? The woman who directed that and voiced it will be on tomorrow night. What time? First hour, second hour? Second hour. From James in Seattle, Mike, it appears that the disinformation guys on the neocon side have gone into high gear. Those 5 to 7 call centers operated by the National Association of Manufacturers are calling various national radio shows purporting to be Democrats and claiming to be switching to McCain. Look for Joe, the lifelong progressive, who now prefers nonsensically, of course, McCain, and Mary, the lifelong Democrat from the Midwest, who, while not able to intelligently articulate her position, will be switching from Hillary to McCain. And, of course, there's also Tyrone from Virginia, who feels Senator Obama is, the famous neocon talking point, untested, and therefore will also be switching to McCain. Evidently, Hillary Clinton was tested by dodging sniper fire in Bosnia, and McCain was tested by being a war hero, although none of them are, according to the news guys, although none of them are able to state what battle McCain displayed his heroism in. War hero? Negative. POW? Certainly. But a POW doesn't necessarily qualify one to be a hero. McCain saw far more combat as a member of the Keating Five. This is the clown who voted against every piece of legislation to raise the minimum wage, who voted against every piece of legislation to increase veterans' benefits and health benefits. McCain's been tested and flunked again and again and again. James in Seattle. Yeah, I'm waiting for the follies to begin once Hillary Clinton decides to move off stage and Barack Obama becomes the presumptive nominee, as they say. We'll see how far McCain's pledge not to get into the slime wallow with the rest of the Republicans, how long that pledge will last. I don't think it'll last very long at all. I think Hillary Clinton is setting the stage for the racist garbage that will be dumped on Obama, and you know it's going to happen. They've already gone after him on his religious affiliation. They've gone after him on his patriotism. And this is just Democrats. Gone after him on his patriotism, his religious affiliation, his experience, his race, everything. Now, maybe that's a good thing. Maybe it's good that the Clinton campaign has tossed all this stuff at him. Because you have to remember, as Michelle Obama has said, her husband is not really a politician. He was an organizer. He was a neighborhood organizer. He taught people how to resist evictions and police brutality and how to bring into your neighborhood some of the social amenities that most people in middle-class neighborhoods already have. Like, oh, I don't know what, a library? So the charges that have been the accusations and Hillary Clinton, along with the media, of course, this would have gone nowhere without the full cooperation of America's pimped media. It just would not have gone anywhere. All the stuff about who? Oh, yeah, Reverend Wright. Oh, God, that was really an important issue, wasn't it? Bill Ayers. Yeah, he was a member of SDS when Barack Obama was, what, 8 years old? Oh, well, there's an indictment if I ever heard one. All of this stuff has been thrown at Obama. It's incredible. You know, here's a guy that is a relatively decent, and I'm not going to qualify it. Here's a guy who's a decent human being. Who had the audacity to decide, well, I think I'll run for president because I think I can do a hell of a better job than anyone else. I mean, why else would somebody run for president? Well, there are lots of reasons. If you're John McCain or Hillary Clinton or George W. Bush or Bill Clinton, I don't think those people run for president because they are dedicated to the idea that this country needs crackerjack leadership. I just don't think that's the case. I think a lot of those people ran for president because they felt it was something they wanted for their own. I want to be president. Son of a bitch. I want to be president. I just don't see Barack Obama as having that sort of hubris, but I digress. So McCain and his minions have probably been watching the assault on Barack Obama with a little bit of chagrin, like, wait, Hillary, don't do that. Wait until he gets a nomination. We're going to do that. Don't. See, if Hillary does it now, by the time the Republicans get around to it, perhaps America would just tune him out. Because look what Barack Obama has done with all this stuff that's been thrown at him. And some of it has been vicious. Some of it has really put him on the defensive. But have you noticed one thing about Barack Obama when he goes on the defensive? He doesn't get shrill, and I'm not using that with any gender connotations to it. He just doesn't get shrill like somebody like, okay, John McCain would get. He doesn't get flummoxed. When he is put on the defensive, he comes back with a powerful rebuttal, usually in the form of a speech that addresses his dedication to this country, his belief in this country. I mean, Barack Obama's no stupid man. And his wife is not a stupid woman. They understand what they're up against. They understand that in doing what they're doing, they're putting their lives in jeopardy. Now, no less a warrior, if you want to call him that, than Colin Powell and his wife decided not to make a run for the presidency based on that same fear. Someone will shoot me. And Colin Powell was very explicit about it. You know, being a black man in America in 92, was it 92 or was it 88? Maybe it was 92. Maybe it was 96. I guess it was 96. And Colin Powell just said, no, that's not going to happen. I'm not going to do it. So Barack Obama and Michelle Obama obviously are well aware of what they're up against. And so is Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton, well aware of the risk that the Obamas are taking. So what do they do, Bill and Hillary? They tiptoe into the white neighborhoods with great big cans of gasoline. They go into those neighborhoods where there might be a cross on somebody's front lawn with the sheets wrapped around it and tied real tight with ropes, and they go in and douse it with gasoline. They don't set the match to it. They just douse it with gasoline. So that when one of these overt racists come by and says, ooh, look, a cross soaked in gasoline, and lights it, the Clintons can say, hey, hey, not us, not us, no, no, not us. Have you got the clip of Hillary again with Kathy Kiley talking about white people? Would you play that for us again? This is with the reporter from USA Today.
How does Hillary Clinton win the nomination?
Well, Kathy, you know, there was just an AP article posted that found how Senator Obama's support among working, hardworking Americans, white Americans, is weakening again, and how the, you know, whites in both states who had not completed college were supporting me. And
all right, that's enough. That's enough. Oh, Jesus, God.
Now I have a question. Hardworking Americans, white Americans, his support is weakening. Now, I'm just playing devil's advocate. Is she implying that hardworking Americans are white Americans, that black Americans are not hardworking Americans, or they're not Americans, or
I don't think
what is the implication?
The implication, I don't think the implication is particularly anything, Kathy. I really don't. I think what she is doing with those statements is she is using the coded language, the wink, wink, nudge, nudge that's been going on in this country for the past 50 years. Before that, it was just lynch 'em. But the wink, wink, nudge, nudge of, hey, I'm gonna say, oh, man, I think civil rights is wonderful, but I'm going to talk the code about how hardworking whites. Black people will hear that, and they'll be offended. But I don't care if they're offended, because they're only 10% of the electorate. The white people will get what I'm saying.
Yeah, well, I think she realizes that she's lost the black support. Poor Bill, he must be just beside himself. Hey, I don't know how he's ever going to go in any of the places he used to go. But how else do you read the sentence? Obama's support among working, hardworking Americans, white Americans, is weakening. You know, whites in both states who have not completed college are supporting me. Okay, so... And then she goes on Billo and says, you know, oh, well, we're a bunch of rich people, and I'm not going to do anything to hurt the rich people. So she's pandering to the top. What is up with this? I mean, how do you just come on television and disenfranchise and just say, well, you know, white Americans, hardworking Americans, you know, the white people like me, the hardworking people, not the other people.
Yeah, well. You know what she's saying. I know it's shocking to you, but you know what she's saying.
Where's the code? I mean, code for... There's no code.
There's no code.
There's no coloring.
There's no code to people who are trying to be honest with their own inborn racism like you are, like I have. But to people who say, racist, I ain't no racist. I just don't like Negroes. That's who she's trying to reach. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Noise shook the ground, and people all over the earth turned around. For no one recalls.
Cross this bloody river to the other side. 41 shots in my boots, Jake, in this mud.
Ready for a liberal helping of truth? It's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. Email here from you people have got to put a name for me so I can say an email from Ralph or an email from Mary or whatever, okay? Mike, replace just the word white in Hillary's statement with the word black and attribute that statement to Obama and see how it sounds. One thing they always forget is Clinton would have never won the White House without the black vote. It's sad they can talk to us like that. All right, let's try it. Kathy Kiley says to Obama, how does Barack Obama win the nomination? Well, Kathy, there was just an article posted that found Senator Clinton's support among working, hardworking Americans, black Americans, is weakening again, and how the, you know, blacks in both states who had not completed college were supporting me. And in independents, I was running even with him and doing even better in Democratic-leaning independents. I have a much broader base to win a winning, to build a winning coalition on. Now, if Barack Obama were to make a statement like that, how long do you think it would take before the freak Joe Scarborough or the pig man Limbaugh jumped all over him? How long do you think it would take for Barack Obama to be accused of a black power advocate, black nationalist, reverse racist? I always love that term. He's a reverse racist. How long do you think it would take? I'll tell you how long it would take before Kathy Kiley got her tape recorder turned off. It would be all over the place. Did you hear what Barack Obama said? Son of a bitch, do you believe this? He's talking about that black power stuff, black vote this, black vote that, right? Now, right at this moment, I don't care who you support. You know what I'm saying is the truth. You know it. And Martin, who's an online listener in Detroit, writes, Mike, I was listening to the television today and heard Clinton speak to a crowd in West Virginia, I believe, using the kind of coded language you're talking about. She said something to the effect of, quote, we need a president who will get up every morning, long pause, and fight for you, end quote. The pause is the key. There's an obvious implication that Obama, the black man, will not get up in the morning to go to work for you. This is nothing more than a play on the racist stereotype of African Americans as shiftless and lazy. Clearly, the remnants of the Dixiecratic wing of the Democratic Party are nervous and are willing to resort to such tactics to rally the Archie Bunkers in this country and to use them as a battering ram for their own material gain. Martin. Yeah, you know, I heard that same soundbite. I did not take notice of the pause. But when I heard the, we need a president who will get up every morning, you know, there's just a flash, like zip, that kind of thing that just zips through your head real quick. When you hear something that you know, there's something else, something going on around a sentence or a phrase or an image, or there's something else there, zip. And I was busy, you know, and moved on. So now that Martin brings it up, we need a president who will get up every morning. Well, Senator Clinton, doesn't a president get up every morning? Doesn't every president get up every morning? I mean, oh, unless he's a Negro. I get it. Wink, wink. Nudge, nudge. It just never stops. Look, this is America. This is the way it is. We have, most of us, accommodated ourselves to it, to the point where the police beatings of black suspects just continue. Well, this latest one in Philly, holy Toledo, did you see that video? Our military correspondent sent this to me with the question. She writes, do you think the people in the Bush administration lie awake at night thinking of ways to screw over our military personnel? The latest, more than 43,000 U.S. troops listed as medically unfit for combat in the weeks before their scheduled deployment to Iraq or Afghanistan since 2003 were sent anyway. Pentagon records show 43,000 medically unfit for combat. They were sent anyway. The article, which was in, oh my God, it was in Army Times. I was going to say USA Today. It was in Army Times. The article goes on, this reliance on troops found medically non-deployable is another sign of stress placed on a military that has sent 1.6 million service members to the war zones. Bobby Mueller, president of Veterans for America, said, quote, it is a consequence of the consistent churning of our troops. They are repeatedly exposed to high-intensity combat with insufficient time at home to rest and heal before redeploying, end quote. Bobby Mueller, president of Veterans for America. The article goes on, the numbers of non-deployable soldiers are based on health assessment forms filled out by medical personnel at each military installation before a service member's deployment. According to those statistics, the number of troops that doctors found non-deployable, but who were still sent to Iraq or Afghanistan, fluctuated from almost 11,000 in 2003, down to 6,000 in 2005, back up to 9,000 in 2007. The Pentagon records do not list what or how serious the health issues are. I mean, it's kind of astonishing to a rational human being. Non-deployable, 43,000 troops listed as medically unfit. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. 43,000 unfit troops sent to war in Afghanistan and Iraq. Physically unfit, medically unfit for combat. Man. This was at armytimes.com. Oh, by the way, this is Nova M Radio, and I'm Mike Malloy. Army Times, continuing here, most of the non-deployable service members that were sent anyway are in the Army. And it's the Army that's doing most of the fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan. And the Army Times article says between 5 and 7% of all active duty National Guard and Reserve soldiers slated for combat were found medically unfit due to health problems each year since 2003. In testimony before the Senate Armed Services Committee in February, the panel's chairman, Carl Levin, Democrat of Michigan, asked Army leaders about an email from the surgeon for the Fort Carson Brigade that said medically, quote, borderline, end quote, soldiers went to war because, quote, we have been having issues reaching deployable strength, end quote. And Army Secretary Pete Green told the committee, well, that should not be happening. I can't tell you that it's not, but it certainly should not be happening. He can't tell. The Secretary of the Army can't tell whether or not a statement from the surgeon for the Fort Carson Brigade is correct or incorrect when he, the surgeon, says medically borderline soldiers go to war because they're not getting enough recruits. And the Secretary of the Army can't comment on that. Son of a bitch. Now, in light of that, and this is what I mini-blogged about today at novamradio.com. Remember all the fal de ral about don't ask, don't tell, about gays in the military, that Bill Clinton tried to implement when he, one of the first things he did out of the box, he just took careful aim and shot himself in both kneecaps back in 92 when he took, or was it 93, when he took office. Careful aim. Ow! Oh! Don't ask, don't tell. And, of course, it was Bill Clinton's way of doing what? I don't know. I have no idea. Maybe doing away with the tradition, unspoken, of course, that gay folk don't serve in the military, when the fact is that there had been queers in the military since there's been a military. And I remember way back all those years ago going over and over again about this, wherever I was working at the time, Alexander the Great was gay. I mean, you can take some of the most exemplary military commanders in the history of warfare. And then you find out that, oh, my goodness, they were gay. Most... almost said civilized countries. I don't think any civilized country has a standing army, but let's play pretend. Most civilized countries, Western European or Eastern, I don't know. God, I'm narrowing it down, aren't I? Western European civilized countries. How's that? They don't care what you are as long as you put on the uniform and pick up a weapon, learn how to use it, and go kill the enemy. I mean, what? What's the big deal? I can remember when this came up in the first Clinton administration, making very sick humor about it, harkening back to the days of foxhole warfare. Like, you fall into a foxhole under heavy enemy fire, and somebody falls into the foxhole with you, and the two of you are just firing like mad. The barrels of your guns are heating up. You turn to the other guy and say, you're not queer, are you? Oh, you are? Well, you please get out of my foxhole. I don't want you protecting my life. Goodbye. Goodbye, queer. My God. Well, last Sunday, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Mike Mullen, told graduating cadets at the U.S. Military Academy that the military was ready to accept gay service members if Congress repeals Don't Ask, Don't Tell. We're ready to accept gay service members. Somebody ought to tell Mike Mullen that of those graduating cadets at the U.S. Military Academy who sat there at attention, probably, pick a number, 6%, 10%, Mike, are gay. They're sitting right there, right in front of you. Oh, my God. Now, Think Progress, whoever wrote this, and my military affairs correspondent wrote in when she sent this to me, she says, I guess hell has frozen over. Because the military says, well, we're ready to accept gay servicemen. We really are. In March 2007, this is why this warrants a little bit of comment. In March last year, the then Joint Chiefs Chairman General Peter Pace, the Marine, remember, he publicly stated that homosexuality is, his word, immoral. He said that he supported Don't Ask, Don't Tell because, quote, we should not condone immoral acts, end quote. Now, at the time, Defense Secretary Robert Gates refused to condemn Peter Pace's remarks. He called the general one of the finest people I've ever worked with, except the one time he put his hand on my knee and I almost lost it. Oh, God. So Peter Pace has said, you know, that it's homosexuality is immoral. It's immoral. I don't quite get that. I really don't. Pedophilia is immoral, right, Bernie? But homosexuality, a God-given, if you want to believe in God nonsense, let's change it, a nature-given attitude, and even if it's not nature-given, so what? A couple of consenting adults? Adult. Keyword there, adult. Oh, I don't want to get into the whole gay issue, but there have always been gay folk in the military. As long as there's a military and as long as there's people, there will be gay folk in the military. There just will. Even public discussion of Don't Ask, Don't Tell has been considered a taboo. Last year, a Pentagon official named David Chu. Now, don't even think about making jokes here. David Chu claimed that, quote, a national debate on allowing gays into the military would bring, his words, divisiveness and turbulence across our country. And, quote, compound the burden of the war, end quote. Divisiveness and turbulence across our country. Son of a bitch, where did David Chu come from? Anyway, now, members of the U.S. military who've been asked have spoken out in favor of repealing the ban. And those who have spoken out have been punished. The latest poll was taken in 2004, found that a majority of junior enlisted service members believe gays and lesbians should be allowed to serve openly in the military. The majority. Now, back in 1992, it was 16%. Now, I don't know where they get these figures. I'm just the reporter. All right? Now, unfortunately, the reversal of don't ask, don't tell is not going to happen if, what's his name? John Sidney McCain III becomes president. Why? Well, in the past, Senator John Sidney McCain III has said repealing the ban would, quote, you ready? This is John Sidney McCain III speaking. If we repeal the ban on queers, it would, quote, elevate the interests of a minority of homosexual service members above those of their units and put the national security of the United States at grave risk, end quote. Now, he doesn't say how the interests of this minority would rise above those of the units. He doesn't say how the national security of the U.S. would be put at grave risk, but he says it nonetheless. Much the same way Hillary Clinton talks about white working class voters choose her. So I have a suggestion. Let's see this ticket. And the purists on either side are going to hate my ass for this. But let's have Obama, General Clark, and over here, John McCain, Hillary Clinton. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Molloy.
Times like these, the siren of the ambulance, the deadpan of the cops, chops him at the outline where the boy first drops. Beware the Holy Trinity, church and state and law. For every death the virus gets more deadly than before. Homophobia, the worst disease. You can't love who you want to love in times like these. Homophobia, the worst disease. You can't love who you want to love in times like these.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more Mike Molloy.
It is, excuse me, 21 past the hour. It's the pollen. I guess that's all I have to say about the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Admiral Mullen, deciding that maybe the military is really ready to accept gay folk in their ranks. As I mini-blogged today at NovamRadio.com, there's a reason for this, of course, and that's because the military understands, I think viscerally they understand that some of the, in terms of history, some of the more profoundly successful military planners in terms of battlefield strategy have, in fact, been gay. If that needs to be taken into account, then let's put it on the table. I think military in the command and control do understand that among their ranks, flag rank officers, that there may be folks who happen to be gay, if that has to be put on the table. By the same token, I think military planners understand that any policy right now that excludes people based on anything, their sexual orientation, their gender, their age, the upward limit of people being accepted in the military has been stretched to the point of almost ridiculousness. You don't take 55-year-old men into the military. You don't do that. Oh, yes, you do if it's Bush's military that's been gutted and destroyed. And because of this incredible need for trigger pullers, for people to just bodies out there. They have lowered the standards, the real moral standards, not where sexual orientation is concerned. It has nothing to do with morality, but the real moral standards. You're petty theft. You didn't respect somebody else's rights or property. We'll take you. You're a batterer. You beat the hell out of somebody. Oh, it was your wife? Oh, okay, we'll take you. Oh, it was somebody else in your neighborhood? We'll take you. Manslaughter? You did what? You were drunk and you were in Iraq and people died and you've served your 3 years and you're looking, oh, okay, we'll take you. I remember when I went to take my physical to be drafted into the Army, I got a 90-day morals waiver because I had a $200 fine for speeding. That's how far they've lowered the standards in order to satisfy this mouth-breathing, bloody, degenerate Dick Cheney's lust for more people and more wars. But as far as gay people or any other group, hey, come on, we need you now. We didn't like you before because you were, you know, queer. Can I say that? But we need you now. Yeah.
I think one of my favorite ironies about that was when they dismissed all the gay Arabic language
translators.
And then invaded Iraq and went, oop. Anybody speak the language? Anybody?
Yeah, yeah. It's insane. It's just one more example. You know, a lot of people say that the military is such a macho organization. What, gay people aren't macho? Not only is it a macho organization, but there's also the dress up part of it. Everybody likes to play dress up. All kids play dress up. I'm not talking about when you're in combat. That's not dress up. That's not fun. That's murder, death, destruction, and self preservation. But, man, once you get on the parade ground, put on those dress whites or dress blues or dress browns or whatever, woo, it's like being a prince of the church. You know, you put on all the ermine and the robes and the mitres and the rings and the hats and the and you carry the little ball of incense. That is trippy, isn't it? It's incredible to me that any kind of policy, diplomatic policy, foreign policy, war policy, policies in school, that anything can be dictated or influenced by somebody's sexual orientation. What? Especially since it's something that always has been, always will be. It is an indication of a natural state. You know, I always liked it when, especially here in the South, when the real gunrunner types would say, "Well, you don't see any queers in nature." You know, you don't. Here, come here. Let me take you out to a farm. Let me take you to out in the woods. Let me take you to, you know, God. Oh well. So anyway, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs says he is ready to talk about gay folk. And as our military correspondent said when she sent this in, hell has frozen over. There is no question. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us. This is Nova M Radio. We'll do some phone calls when we come back, too.
Learn to fly, baby.
Distance Radio with Mike Malloy.
Before the hour, one last thing regarding military. Our military correspondent, Sharon, just was working overtime the past couple of days. There are currently 56 senators, including 10 Republicans, who have joined Senator Jim Webb's effort to dramatically expand educational benefits for returning veterans. Jim Webb, of course, Democrat from Virginia, used to be Secretary of the Navy, I believe, in the Reagan administration. 56 senators. But they need 60. Need 60! You know, got to have that veto-proof thing going, right? The filibuster thing going. And then you need another 7 to override the veto that'll come from the dumbass in the White House. Anyway, it's called the 21st Century GI Bill. It would pay a significant portion of college costs for all service members, including National Guard members, who served in active duty after September 11, 2001. The Pentagon and the White House opposed the bill. You know why? Out of fear that too many soldiers will use it. Huh? In a press briefing Tuesday, Pentagon spokesman Jeff Morrell explained the administration's opposition to this 21st century GI Bill, warning of the harm, his word, harm, Webb's bill would do to troop retention. Right? No, why should we let them out, is the Pentagon's attitude. We will stop loss them and send them back again and again and again until we drive them goddamn crazy. Or until they're dead. Or until their arms are blown off. College my ass. We want their bodies. We're even thinking about taking queers now. The Pentagon says Webb's bill would harm troop retention. And the Pentagon and the White House, that would be Dick Cheney, object to the generous benefits given after only, quote, quote, 2 years of service. Only. Can you believe this? Can you believe this? Into a military, into a combat zone, a hot fire combat zone, urban warfare, the worst kind, roadside explosives, hell on earth. And if the soldier's only been there 2 years, oh, well, that's not a lot. The White House and the Pentagon said the following. Well, the Pentagon spokesman Jeff Morrell said this, quote, "We have no issue with the fact that Senator Webb wishes to provide a more generous education benefit to troops, but we are certainly concerned that this would be eligible to them after only 2 years of service. We think pegging it to a longer period of service, the number we have in mind at this point is 6 years of service, that the longer you stay in, the sweeter the benefits are to you. 6 years would show a commitment to service. The last thing we want to do is provide a benefit, or the last thing we want to create a situation in which we are losing our men and women who we have worked so hard to train." You son of a bitch, you boy. This guy, wouldn't you like to just sit this guy down in a dimly lit room and have a conversation with him about the soldiers that we have trained, especially the 43,000 who are medically unfit to go to battle, and they send them anyway? And these pigs stand out there, these civilian pigs stand out there with the Pentagon seal on the podium in front of them and say stuff like this. Now get this. Jeff Morrell, the Pentagon spokesman, suggests that those who serve their country for a full 2 years somehow do not show a commitment to service and therefore undeserving of benefits. So under this freak's terms, a soldier who participated in the invasion of Baghdad in April of 2003 and had remained in service ever since would be forced to serve another year before becoming eligible for full benefits. I don't know why there's not a general mutiny in the ranks. I really don't. I don't know what happens to these young kids' minds that they get this kind of information. This stuff is published in Army Times. And they don't read it and go, what the... The chairman of Vote Vets, John Soltz, and General Wesley Clark both wrote recently, quote, "It is morally reprehensible to fix the system so that civilian life is unappealing to service members in an attempt to force them to re-up." In other words, when a young man, young woman does get out of the military, after 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. Now the service contract is usually for what? 6 years? Is that what it is these days? 6 years? But usually you serve 2 years, 3 years of that on active duty, then some in the ready reserve, some in the inactive reserve, so on and so on and so on. But the Pentagon is thanking thousands of Iraq and Afghanistan veterans by telling them that unless they served 6 years on active duty, they weren't worthy of receiving the new GI Bill. They're not worthy. They're not worthy. So, Brandon Friedman, writing at VetVoice.com, says, so for all you veterans out there, and even those of you on active duty, who've done multiple combat tours during your first 2 to 5 years of service, this means you haven't done enough to have earned full GI benefits, GI Bill benefits. It doesn't matter if you've lost your marriage. It doesn't matter if you wake up 3 nights a week now with your heart racing. It doesn't matter if you've left parts of your body on some street in Baghdad. You still haven't given enough. If you want the government to cover the full cost of your education like it did for your grandparents after World War II, you'll just have to keep giving until you reach that 6-year mark. Astonishing stuff. How did we get to the point in this country where we have been told, and some of us believe it, that the Republicans are more interested in a viable, sound, respected military than Democrats? How did that happen? Republicans treat soldiers and Marines and airmen as junk. Junk. They don't want to give them any benefits. They don't want to send them into combat well-trained or well-armed or well-protected. This is the part that makes me get profane and say bad words on my radio program. It's stuff like this. Now, if you want to read some more about this, go to vetvoice.com. Vetvoice.com. I wonder how the old farts that hang out in the VFW Post and the American Legion Post, how do you old farts feel about this, huh? How do you people feel? You allow Bush to come into your and give speeches at your convention, and he wears a garrison cap. How do you do that? How do you allow a draft-dodging, cowardly son of a bitch who commits people to battle who are physically not supposed to be there? How do you invite this thug into your convention to address you? How do you do that? What do you boys feel? You old farts, huh? Speak up. How do you feel about the benefits for soldiers? How do you feel about the Pentagon saying, well, no. Make it 6 years or no bennies for you, because, you know, if we make it 2 years or 3 years, why, you little Weasley bastards may decide you made it through 2 deployments and you're getting out and you're going to what, college? So come on, you American Legion types. You right-wing American Legion types.
What do you think?
Huh? Where do you stand on this one, boys? Where do you stand? Where do you stand on the queers in the military issue, boys? Huh? Where do you stand on that? Where do you stand on the vets after 2 years getting full benefits? You know, the guy proposing this, the two guys, Chuck Hagel is a veteran, Jim Webb's a veteran, one's Republican, one's now a Democrat. I would be very curious to know how the boys swilling beer and playing bingo at the VFW post and the American Legion post, how you feel about this new crop of young soldiers. Do they deserve bennies? Do they? We'll be back after the break and your phone calls. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Reminiscent of the Great Depression. A lot worth the world of power, easy question. Planes hit the towers in the Pentagon, killing those the government wasn't dependent on. It's easy to control the scared, so they keep us in fear. With their favorite Middle Eastern demon named Bin Laden this year. Bush disguises blood, loves his patriotism, convincing the living to love operation. Let's get him. But when he realized we don't support their attacks, they needed something to distract. Anthrax. This further demonizes Afghanis. So America's cheer while we kill their innocent families. And what better place to start?
And now a soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malone.
10 before the hour, we are at, aside from everything else that the United States is involved in right now, all the evil stuff that we're doing around the planet, all the ugliness that Bush and Cheney have initiated, all the treaties broken, all the reputation of the United States is as tenuous as that reputation was where it concerns good works. We still had kind of an attitude like that directed toward, well, it's in the United States, they usually come to. In spite of all that, you know, here we or in the middle of all that, here we are at a moment in our history where there is a possibility that because of one man and one woman, Barack and Michelle Obama, that we might just be able, after 350 years here on Turtle Island, we might all of a sudden, not all of a sudden, but we might just a little bit be able to turn the corner on our racist, slave-owning, genocidal past. Just maybe it's come to this. Look, he's a good-looking guy. He's smart. He's got a good-looking wife. His mom was white. Maybe at this moment in our history, maybe we could just get over the hump and leave the racist, knuckle-dragging, redneck, Klan-loving, Confederate flag-waving asses in the dust. Maybe. And who comes along to screw it up? Hillary Clinton. With, and her husband. With the ugly, snide, nasty ass racism. Her ambition is more important to her than an historic moment, not because a white woman might be president or a black man might be president, because maybe, just maybe, enough white people will shut up and listen for once, not to the racist thugs, not to the voices in their heads, but to this man, Barack Obama, whether he gets elected or not. Listen to him, look at him, and realize, white people, you don't have to be afraid anymore. You really don't. You really can be confident in electing a man who is not white to a position of political power. You can do it. You can do it. And along comes Hillary Clinton with this nasty-ass, snide, thinly-veiled, wink-wink, nudge-nudge, Nixonian wedge kick in the groin of America. No, my chance to be the first woman president is more important than any of this. Okay. I'm not saying that the presidential race is a place to try to superficially bring about 3 centuries of horror between two races to bring about racial healing. But don't you take every opportunity that's offered to you on something like this? This has been the scar on this country. This has been the, and no, I'm not talking about the genocide against Native Americans. I'm talking about slave holding. I'm talking about the scar between whites and blacks, the scar that rips across this entire society, the scar that manifests itself in 10-to-1 disparities in drug sentencing. You got crack? You're going to jail for 10 years. You got powder? You're going to jail for 1. You're white? You're black? Sorry! Just the way it goes. On and on and on and on. But Hillary Clinton's blind ambition, ferocious ambition, it's not blind, her ferocious ambition, while everything they throw at this guy, everything, and he still comes back, and he comes back, and he comes back, which speaks volumes about how hungry we are in this country to get over it. And Hillary Clinton and her husband and her operatives say, no, mm-mm, no, sorry, afraid not, no, not now, mm-mm. Hillary Clinton is more important than anything having to do with any kind of accommodation or, God forbid, healing between blacks and whites in this country. Mm-mm, mm-mm. Maybe next time. It's disgusting. It's really disgusting.
I was just going to add earlier that maybe Brock's white mother was going to vote for Hillary. Well, Hillary has all the white women all sewn up.
She's dead.
Well, from beyond the grave.
So's his father. So Hillary.
I'm going to shut up then.
Hillary is attacking an orphan. Oh, God. All right. I did it again. If you're on hold, and every single line is full, so don't go away. We've got this top of the hour break. We're going to come back, and we're going to do nothing but phone calls the last hour. I promise. Absolute ironclad promise, your phone calls. I won't talk about Cindy McCain says she'll never release her tax returns. Rah! I'm not going to talk about that. I'm not going to talk about, there's a whole bunch of stuff here. The FBI is seeking records on this Condoleezza Rice ethics probe from 4 years ago that this guy that they're ready to bust, what's his name? Block. Scott Block, the guy who, the special U.S. counsel, who hopefully will soon be in prison. Now, we're not going to talk about that. We're going to come back after the break, and we're going to take your phone calls. All right? And if you'd like to join in that part of the program, the number is 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. It's 7 past the hour. This is the Nova M Radio Network. My name is Mike Malloy. Quick email here from Lou in Fayetteville, Arkansas, and then to your phone calls. Lou writes, Mike, the Second World War lasted about 4 years. This is in regard to the Pentagon saying the current crop of veterans should not get benefits unless they serve for 6 years. Mike, the Second World War lasted about 4 years. My war, Korea, lasted about 38 months. And the benefits for another couple of years. Most draftees, mostly in the Korean War, were draftees, few reenlistments, no 6 years needed to qualify. After 50 years of rejection, I joined the American Legion, which lasted 1 year until I saw their commander walking hand in hand with Bush. Yeah, I hear you. All right, let's go to the phone calls, starting with Marie, who is calling from Lee's Summit, Missouri, listening on the Internet. Hey, Marie.
How are you?
I'm all right. How are you doing?
Fine. I admire your show so much, and I admire you.
Well, that's very kind. Thank you.
I think you're doing great work. I just have a really important question, but let me just start off saying that I have been a Barack Obama supporter since the 2004 Democratic Convention, and I've always felt that Hillary appeals to the Dixiecrats of the party, basically. And like you've said numerous times, she isn't a Democrat, and I think that she's got a narcissistic disorder of great proportions at this point, but she's been on a mission to destroy a decent intellectual man, and I am sure that you can understand my lunacy if I tell you that I felt for a long time that if she got the stole the nomination, I was thinking of even going for McCain just out of spite. But in truth, it's because I don't see a difference between Hillary or McCain. Mm-hmm. And my question is, the other day you said, you know, those of us turncoat Democrats that would vote for McCain if Hillary got the nomination, you said, you know, they'll vote Democrat, vote independent, or vote for Nader, anything but for McCain. And my problem is, I just was like, why would, you know, because I know that you agree with me about Hillary, why would you say just stick with being the Democratic nominee, which would be her? I mean, and then, of course, later, earlier tonight, I heard you say, well, McCain should get Hillary as his vice president, which, I mean, it's ironic, but I agree with you.
All right. Well, let me try to answer that, Maria. It's a fair question because I'm about as confused as I've ever been regarding this political season. I usually, by this time in a political season, I've pretty much got my ducks in order and I know what I'm going to do in the voting booth, and I don't know this time. I guess what I'm trying to say is that In politics, so many times it gets down to a matter of degrees. I would like to see the entire Democratic Party purged and have real liberal progressive Democrats take the place of people who are now in positions of power. I do not think that Barack Obama, for example, is a liberal Democrat. I just don't. I think he is more of a centrist Democrat. And I don't know how... You know, I'm not sure how I feel about that, except when I look at Barack Obama in comparison to what we've had in this country for the past 16, 20 years in the White House. Now, the fact that he may be a centrist Democrat, I don't know if he's really a centrist Democrat or if that's the position he has to adopt.
I think so. Yeah.
In order to have people listen to him. I don't think he's a dishonest man. I don't think he's going to say things and then turn around and do the exact opposite. But I think, if anything, Barack Obama is a realist. He knows that there are certain things that one says and certain things one does not say if one is really interested in trying to turn this country in a different direction and doing that from the Oval Office. As far as Hillary Clinton and John McCain are concerned, they are of the old school. It's the same old, same old. I don't care if there's no difference between Ronald Reagan and Bill Clinton. There's no difference between Herbert Walker Bush and Hillary Clinton. It's the same old garbage. It just keeps coming and coming and coming. Now, when I say to the people who would be turncoats and leave the Democratic Party if their candidate doesn't get nominated, whether it's Clinton or Obama, I guess what I'm saying there is that even Hillary, in its very close race, would be less of a threat to America and the world than John McCain. Now, before everybody starts sending me emails and say, no, you're wrong, Mike, she's just as big of a threat. I understand that that's a possibility, too. But here's the way I feel. Anyone who votes Republican is making a grave mistake. What they are saying is, okay, I want to be beaten, flayed, kicked, and watch my country go down for another 4 years. And I just think that Hillary would not drag the country down maybe as quickly or as deeply as John McCain. I don't think Barack Obama would drag it down at all. So I'm caught here, Marie. On a Monday night, I'll say this. On a Wednesday night, I'll say that. On a Tuesday night, I go back to what I said Monday night. I don't know what the hell, which way is up. I've got good friends out there who listen to send me emails who tell me I'm crazier than a loon for supporting any of the three. But I understand the reality of, I think I do, the reality of politics in this country. There is no way in hell after 40 years, and I'm going all the way back to 68, after 40 years of the destruction of the Democratic Party, turning it into Republican light, after 40 years of the Republican Party going Nazi, it's almost impossible to have a candidate now who will step out and say, I represent progressive, liberal, democratic ideas. Vote for me. America would run. America would wet its pants out of fear about what this person would do, even though all that person would do would be to work in the best interests of America and the world. So I don't think I'm making any sense. Am I making sense?
No, I totally agree with you. I feel like I'm on it. I mean, I just had Rocky Road ice cream before I called you, and I'm thinking I might as well just call it Obama ice cream because he's going through a Rocky Road period right now, and it's going to get worse. And I agree with you. And I feel that, I mean, I've been in an emotional roller coaster with you and everybody else. I see this man. I see everything that's going wrong in this country. Uh-huh. And just the other day I was crying, and I'm like, gosh, I'm not crying about anything that's personal in my life. I'm just crying about what's going on in this country.
Oh, I hear that.
I was weeping, and I just had to get a tissue and just get it all wet and sobby. It's just,
sure.
You know. But the thing is that I agree with you about what you said about Obama, and I think that personally, I think that he knows that the only way he's going to make headway in this country is if he did become run as a Democrat. You know, And hopefully, if she ever steals the nomination. I hope that he will at least try and run as an independent. I'm hoping.
Mm-hmm.
And because, I mean, I'm all the way for him. I've been that way since I saw him, like I said, on TV in the Democratic National Convention talking, and I was just awestruck by him. And,
well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say the other thing is, I mean, I apologize about the whole, thinking, I'm going to go run for McCain if Hillary steals it. But the other thing that was interesting, did you know that McCain actually asked his Republican Party, they were planning before the North Carolina election, they were planning on posting a whole bunch of these ads and all these things about, Obama and his ties with Reverend Wright. You know, it's all racist attacks, and,
sure.
And McCain asked them, please do not do that. Did you hear about that?
I did, but I have a hard time
believing it.
Yeah, believing it. I
yeah,
just,
maybe he's covert. Maybe he's just, his racism
is a little
covert.
But listen, Marie, I've got to go. But I understand. I appreciate your clarity on this issue. I wish I was as clear on it as you are.
I want to tell you one more thing. I just read on the news, and
quickly.
I just wanted to let you know about Hillary. She has asked, and I thought you'd find this interesting, she's asked superdelegates who want to support her if they feel comfortable to do it privately. You know what that means.
What do you think it means?
Oh, come on.
No, go ahead, say it.
Well, obviously, the Dixiecrat, racist, superdelegates, if they feel, want to be a little quiet about it.
I understand. But all right.
A nice little message.
All right, Marie, I'm glad you called in. Thanks for your comments.
Thanks, Mike.
And I wish I could share in the clarity that you seem to have regarding what you're going to do on Election Day. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
And in between the static and the headlines, I heard that you were gone. We lost another one. There was a time. That we go on and on and on and on.
forget tonight how much he hates these people? It's more of Mike Malloy.
Standing tough under stars and stripes.
21 past the hour. Back to your phone calls. Moses is calling from Miami, listening on WINZ. Moses, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking my call. I'm going to try to make this as short as possible. But if I was a white person, and I heard what Senator Clinton said today about the uneducated white voters, hardworking white voters, I mean, I take very much offense to it because I'm a Haitian black man. And I'm kind of sympathizing with a lot of white people who Hillary is saying, oh, well, you know, you don't know any better. You're uneducated. So, hey, why don't you just vote for me? I guess that's where we kind of you took it as more of a racist tone that she's attacking blacks. But I take it more.
I brought up the fact that it's also a that's why we played the other soundbite first, the one where she said, God bless us rich people. It has to do. Hillary is playing every card she possibly can. She's going after rich whites. She's going after uneducated whites. She's going after working class whites. She's what's the word I keep repeating? Whites.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
White but folk.
She kind of said she. That's true. You're absolutely right. But in the way she said, well, you know, you're kind of dumb. You don't know any better. So why don't you just vote for me? I mean, that was I took very much great offense to it. I also want to talk about these people, these Hillary Clinton supporters. I don't know if they're listening to me right now, in which they say that they will vote for McCain if Hillary doesn't get in. I mean, that's one of the biggest mistakes that they could ever make, because think about what we've had with the Bush administration. And we had a Bush administration here in Florida, Jeb Bush.
Oh, yeah.
And in 2006, they elected a Republican, Charlie Crist.
Mm-hmm.
And things in Florida have gotten worse. I mean, the state funding has been cut dramatically. There's been cuts in education. There's been cut in health care. And they're going to see this whole thing will perpetuate itself throughout the whole nation if John McCain becomes president, and we will get even worse, 10 times even worse than what we had in the past 8 years of George Bush. America will be totally destroyed if we have a McCain presidency, because what's happening in Florida will be 100 times worse with a John McCain presidency. And I remember you were frustrated the other it was a long time ago. You were frustrated with the whole Katrina incident, that you did a skit where you were speaking to John Kerry, a President John Kerry. I don't know if you remember that. But
yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
You were explaining how President John Kerry finally was coming up with a wrap-up with the end to the Iraq War, and how the Katrina was not a big issue.
Yeah.
You portrayed John Kerry saying, what about Katrina? It just happened, and how it wasn't a big issue, and how the economy was booming, and how we didn't have situations in poverty, and that the Constitution was being restored. I was filled with so much hope. And
what happened to it?
No, I mean, that skit that you said filled me up with so much hope, and to see that we could be at a change in history right now with an Obama presidency, and for people to say, hey, I'm just going to vote for McCain, I mean, I think it would be just like if they could imagine what condition we would be if we'd had Gore or Kerry as president right now, how we wouldn't be in the mess that we're in. And for these people to just say, hey, you know what, well, I'm just going to vote for McCain if my girl doesn't get in. I mean, I think it's just, it would just be destroying this country, because we would have had Gore or Kerry as president, things would have been totally different.
Yeah, I understand. I hear what you're saying. And again, Moses, thanks for checking in. Like I told the last caller, I wish I had the clarity that some of you seem to have, but I agree that if someone calls himself a Democrat and is going to throw a temper tantrum and act like my 3.5-year-old acts when she can't get her way, and vote for McCain because Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton didn't get the nomination, I think that speaks volumes about the maturity of people who say that, don't you? It really does. You know, politics ain't beanbag. It is an ugly contact sport. And I'm not talking about the candidates. I think it's disgusting, some of the stuff that the Republicans and in some cases Democrats put out there as political ads. But for those of us who are not running, for those of us who are in this surprisingly, incredibly volatile, insane situation this go-around, where the Democratic Party nomination, the Democratic National Committee tried to stack it, tried to work it so that a decision would be made no later than what, Super Tuesday or March, and that decision was supposed to go to Hillary Clinton. There is no question here that that's how it was set up, and it didn't work that way. And what's going on right now is a verification of the statement that politics ain't beanbag. It is really rough, bloody sport when people involved make it such. It doesn't have to be this way. But again, any adult who pulls a little temper tantrum if their Democratic candidate doesn't make it and says, I'm going to vote for the Republican, you ought to be treated like what the way you sound. You ought to be sent to your room for a timeout. And if you keep it up, somebody ought to take your pants down and smack you on your ass. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
And in between the static and the headlines, I heard that you were gone. We lost another one. There was a time we thought we were invincible. That we'd go on and on and on and all along. We thought we'd do another show.
Proof that fish and humans can coexist peacefully. It's more of Mike Malloy.
It is 26 before the hour. Got an email here from Ward, who's, excuse me, Ward is listening in Japan regarding my comment about politics ain't beanbag. Ward writes, Mike, politics ain't beanbag? That reminds me of a W.C. Fields line. Girl, the only game I ever played was beanbag. W.C. Fields. Beanbag. Ah, very good. It becomes very exciting at times. I saw the championship played in Paris. Many people were killed. Thanks, Ward. Oh, yeah. Back to your phone calls. Roger is calling from Texas, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Roger.
Hi, how are you doing, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you?
Mike, I'm just fine. I'm the wisest mover. I've called you before.
Yes, uh-huh.
And I'm going to make this real quick. I'm not asking for a comment. I'm in Nebraska right now, and I went in to get some dinner, met another driver, talked to him real quick, and he said that, you know, we got talking about, you know, the economy, diesel, Bush, everything else, and the waiter came over and said, do not talk about this. These are all Republicans. They don't quite believe in questioning the government. Mike, we're beyond all hope, me and you.
No, wait, the waitress said that?
Yes, and I shut up, and you could hear a pin drop. I said, look, I'm not here to start trouble, but here's what I realized, Mike. Have you ever read Mein Kampf? And the whole plan is following this. Okay, I was in an American restaurant at the Nebraska Land Truck and Travel Center. I couldn't even talk to somebody without somebody interrupting me because I could have offended some of the other working class people who were sitting at the table and live here. What's wrong, Mike? I know what's wrong, okay? And at that very moment, okay, I said, look, the end of politics for me. I am just going to take care of my family, my wife, my granddaughters, my dogs.
Mm-hmm.
We're beyond hope, Mike. And I'm sorry to say that, but that's where we're at. No matter who we get elected, yes, I'm going to vote for Barack Obama. Yes, I will vote for him, but we're in a devastated state.
Well, I hear what you're saying, and I just can't quite yet, even though it may not sound like this every night on this program, I can't quite give up hope.
No, but Mike, I'm right now in the self-survival mode, okay? it's like a chaos. It's like I got to take care of my wife and kids and dogs and grandkids.
No, I understand. I know you got to do what you got to do. I mean, no matter how much we like to call ourselves political creatures, we human beings, we also have that imperative to survive. And if it means,
but Mike, when the mentality doesn't allow you to do that, I'm sitting with a bunch of workers that have rotted teeth and beards and everything else. Oh yeah, McCain's gonna be next president. I'll tell you where I'm in Nebraska and fucking Travel Center somewhere in the middle of Iowa or Nebraska. I mean, what, you can't deal with these people. Now, I live in Trinity, Texas, a bunch of rednecks, black-hating, ignorant, stupid. By the way, I'm a veteran, too.
Yeah.
And I can't even go to the VA. You know why I can't? Because when Cheney gave his buddies tax cuts, a healthy veteran like me, they cut our funding. How's that sound? And I get a homework assignment right now for you, Mike.
All right.
I want you to – I met some couple last month in St. Paul, Minneapolis. I want you, Mike, I want you to consider this. Here's your assignment.
Okay.
Okay. What it is, I want you to call it St. Paul VA Hospital tomorrow. And I want you to find out how many of our veterans' penises have been chopped off in the end of 3 weeks because they're rotting out. 3 a week of our veterans, our penises are getting chopped off because they rot out. And, Mike, you can call me or not. I'm going to listen to you all night tomorrow. I'll be in Minneapolis tomorrow night. And if you think I'm a nut,
I certainly don't think you're a nut, Roger. But it's going to be a little bit difficult for me to call the VA hospital.
You're going to think I'm a nut because I'm telling you the truth like you tell me the truth.
Hold on. I'm just saying it's going to be a little bit difficult for me. I don't think I could get the information anyway to call the VA hospital in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and say how many veterans' penises are you cutting off every day?
Well, sir. Yeah, but I understand it. I understand it. I believe it. But I met the lady that's a surgical assistant.
No, I'm not. Wait, Roger, I'm not doubting your word. I'm sure that there is, maybe this is a battlefield injuries. Maybe it's some sort of weird, that MRSA bacterial infection. Maybe it's venereal disease. Maybe it's, I don't know. But you're a veteran. I'm not. You need to call, and then call me back from Minneapolis and let me know what they say, all right?
You know what, Mike, I will do that, because if they tell me the truth, which they probably won't, okay?
All right, well, you make the effort.
I will do that, sir.
Okay.
And I'll tell you what, I love your show, but I just want to tell you the truth tonight, all right?
Okay, I hear you, and I appreciate it, Roger. I appreciate it. You take care, okay?
Okay, bye.
All right, we'll wait to hear from you. We'll wait to hear from you about the penis excisions in, I don't know. I'm not going to, say anything one way or the other. Gordon, Oklahoma writes, Mike, I accuse those threatening to vote McCain if Hillary loses the nomination as being Dittohead Limbaugh Operation Chaos moles. As far as sincere Clinton supporters, I say take a deep breath. Work through the emotional stages a person needs after a loss the best you can. Once that's done, then and only then we can have a heart-to-heart talk. that's true. That's very true. Cutting off penises?
Oh, thoughts crossed my mind once or twice.
Yeah, well, that's because you're just a wild-eyed feminist rabble-rouser. That's why. What did I just read? Something, when he said that, I know everybody here in Phoenix are reaching for the dump button, but not me. I'm thinking, wait a second. What have I heard about that? It had something to do with, maybe it was just a, wait. I know what it is. It was a picture. It was an article in the New York Times this week. They had a picture of a guy sitting there on a bed with his head in his hands. He's now dead. It was about detention. That's what it was about. An illegal immigrant, there you go, who was picked up, put into a detention situation, was begging for some medical intervention because of what was going on with his genitals. By the time he got any kind of medical help whatsoever, he had metastasized penile cancer is okay, and he is now dead. And his family, at the same time he was trying to get help, his family is trying to get him help, but the good old immigration law enforcement people said no, let him sit there and die. So penile cancer, if that's what the caller is talking about, case upon case upon case of that, we'll find out.
Well, what is true?
No jokes.
No jokes.
Okay.
No, what is true? My grandfather died in the VA hospital as a result of something not terribly dissimilar about...
And your grandfather was a lieutenant colonel.
Yeah, he was. He gave 40-something years to the military as a psychologist, and he was active duty in World War I,
right,
which he volunteered for when he was 16. But he developed blood poisoning and died of septicemia in the VA hospital from a catheter that was not changed in an appropriate way. And we begged those doctors over and over. We knew there was something wrong. We could tell from the bag, you know, not to get graphic, but you knew there was an infection and they weren't treating it. And he actually, you know, he survived strokes and pneumonia and, bilateral hip fractures. And he was killed by blood poisoning that he did get from an infected catheter in the VA hospital. So the chopping off the penis thing, as odd as it sounds, you know, he literally died from a penile infection.
Well, here we have it. It's at, and thanks to Reg for sending this to him, antiwar.com, article from January 4th, a year ago, on when the number of U.S. soldiers killed in Iraq passed 3,000. He goes on and on. It talks about a doctor, Vito Imbashini, a colonel, a urologist and state surgeon with the California Army National Guard, talking about soldiers who survive attacks but are often severely disabled for life. The doctor says if you lost an arm or leg in Vietnam, you were also tremendously injured in your chest and abdomen, which were not protected by the armor plates back then. Now your heart and chest and lungs are protected by armor, leaving only your extremities exposed. Dr. Imbashini just returned from a four-month deployment to Germany where he treated the worst of the U.S. war wounded. He said that an extremely high number of wounded soldiers are coming home with their arms or legs amputated. The doctor also said he amputated the genitals of one or two men every day. He said, I walk in the operating room and the general surgeons are doing their work, and there is the body of a Navy SEAL, which is a physical specimen to behold, and his abdomen is open. They're exploring both intestines. He's missing both legs below the knee. One arm is blown off. He's got incisions on the thighs to relieve the pressure on the parts of the legs that are hopefully going to survive. And there's genital injuries. And you just want to cry. Tonight for assistance in the production of the Malloy program here on Nova M. Ian Huff, who engineered, Billy Foster, our technical director. podcast manager, Ben Birch, senior correspondent, Kristen, Minnesota, resident philosopher is Bob Alexander, writer in residency, Bridget Wolf. Sharon Gordy is our military affairs correspondent. The executive producer is Catherine Bay. And it's now easier than ever to thank Nova M sponsors. Huh? You can simply click on sponsor directory at novamradio.com. And, you know, everybody likes to be told they're doing a good thing. So if you're so inclined, try that. And if you're not a Nova M founding member, I'm sure would invite you to become one. Go to novamradio.com and all the info is there. Back to your phone calls. Ben is calling from California, listening on KTLK. Ben, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you.
Sure.
I was, you know, there's a vigil. It's a peace vigil that has been going on for 2 years by Code Pink mm-hmm. in the city of Orange. It's at the Orange Traffic Circle.
Mm-hmm.
And 3 weeks ago, I showed up because the Code Pink people were being outnumbered by the Freepers, you know, who wanted pro-war. So I went 3 weeks ago, and I just drove around with my sage burning in my car. I just drove around the traffic circle 4 times.
With sage.
With sage.
Sage burning. Okay.
Yeah.
You were trying to purify the event?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I was trying to purify just everything. I mean, the event was probably already pure, but...
Sure. I understand.
You know, so the next week I went, and you know, I swear to God, Mike, as I was driving away, I could have swore I heard them say, "Come back. Come back." You know, obviously I didn't hear the "don't" part, but, you know, so I came back yesterday.
Yeah.
And I drive around, and there's one guy, he had been one of the Freepers.
Right.
And he's asking me, "Come on, give me your sage." And I told him, "I got to do this 4 times, man." And he says, as I go around the 3rd time, he says, "That's number 3, you know. But there I was on the south side of the circle, and the police came running out, guns drawn, screaming, "Stop, stop, stop right there." You know, I'm like, "What?" And, "What do you have?" "I have sage." "Throw it down. Gently. Gently throw it down." "Okay," you know. Essentially what happened, Mike, I got arrested for burning sage. Why? Because one of the Freepers had gone to the police and said, "There's a man driving around the park with an incendiary device."
Well, the Freeper was right, but the cops overreacted.
I think you're right, yeah.
So no, you got busted for burning sage. What was the final outcome? Did they realize that they were making total asses of themselves and
yes,
say, "Oops, sorry"?
Yes. Oh, you know what? The one cop he was saying is going, "No, you know why I had to drive down on you, right? I mean, I didn't. Yeah. You can understand why." He's almost going like that. It's like Ralph Cramden, you know, except this was like a 20-something white boy, you know.
Oh my God. He probably stood there when he finally got you pulled over and thought, "Oh my God, this smells like Thanksgiving."
Well, yeah.
All right. Well, that's that's a great story, Ben. You know, take care, because they will beat your head into the ground for less than that, right? Ben? Where's Ben? I guess Ben is gone. All right, thanks, Ben. I appreciate your call. Alvin is calling from Alabama, listening on Sirius. Hello, Alvin.
Hello, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right.
Mike, I'm somewhat disappointed.
Uh-oh. What happened?
I'm hearing you characterizing the Clintons as being racist, and the Clintons don't have a history of being racist. They have a history of standing up for black people. I want to name some names to you.
No, wait. Stop a second.
Okay. All right.
Stop a second.
Okay.
I want you to listen to something, all right? And I'm going to play this again, and you tell me. I'm just...
Alvin, stop,
or I'm going to just disconnect you. This is my show. You're in my house. You will play by my rules. Now, I want you to listen to this, Alvin.
I was running even with him, and
how does Hillary Clinton win the nomination?
Well, Kathy, you know, there was just an AP article posted that found how Senator Obama's support among hardworking Americans, white Americans, is weakening again,
and how the, you know, whites in both states who had not completed college were supporting me.
Okay. All right. Now let's bring Alvin back. Now, Alvin, I'm going to put you back on the air. I'm going to put you back on the air, Alvin, but you have to mind your manners. You're in my house. You understand me?
I want to ask you a question.
No. Here you go again.
Ask you a question.
Do you understand the rule? When you're in my house, you act respectfully. Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Go ahead. Ask the question.
Thank you, sir.
Sure.
Have you heard the name Ron Brown, Mike Espy, Hazel Lear, Alexis Herriman, Roger
Sure,
Slater,
sure,
Joshua
sure.
Elder, David Satcher, Robert Gray, Betty Kerr, Vernon Gerald, and Chuck West?
Sure.
Okay. Now, it's real fashionable right now for a lot of people to say that the Clintons are racist and they're doing this.
No, the Clintons are saying they're racist. What are you talking about? The Clintons, by their own statements, when they say, when Barack Obama won the primary in South Carolina and Bill Clinton comes out and said, well, Jesse Jackson won it too, either you don't understand the language being used or you choose not to understand the language being used. I'm not sure which, Alvin, but listen, I'll tell you what, you call back tomorrow and we'll finish up the phone call because we're flat out of time. But... I don't know, Alvin, if you want to vote Clinton, go ahead. I'm not saying don't vote Clinton. I'll see you tomorrow night, Truth Seekers. Take care, all right? Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.